Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. So I was thinking about what episode to make, and I may actually end up including this inside of season 5. Not sure. But the subject we're going to cover today came out of a meeting I had with some friends of mine that I'm working with, and this is something I've alluded to and mentioned in previous episodes, but these are amazing people. I mean, profoundly amazing people. We've all been in think tanks. Some people have created the think tanks. But it's really aimed at improving the world, an extremely formal level and taking formal steps. And if the project ever comes to fruition, I'll definitely point you guys at it. But if nothing else, the amazing amount of information that we're sharing in these meetings, I am sitting there. You know, if I'm not talking, I'm writing down everything everyone's saying. Yeah, we use this tool called Zoom, which is like Skype. You can share your screen, all this good stuff. And so they'll show us websites. You know, we're sharing websites, sharing books. And this particular subject was just mentioned, but it was mentioned in the context that I think is very important. And I think it will change the way that we perceive wisdom, the way we manifest wisdom, and the way we use wisdom in the world, because I think it is something that has eluded me in the grand sense of things, in the macro sense of things. A lot of you know I'm posting up the entire series to BitChute, which is an excruciating process because if you go too fast, it starts to fail, and it just fails sometimes, and so you're trying to keep everything, I'm trying to keep everything numbered properly in the channel. So every once in a while, one gets ahead of the other one because the one I upload before is either longer, takes longer to encode, or it just failed in general. But the subject is what I'm going to call just human imperfection. And I was uploading the old episode in season 2 on betrayal, which is about an episode where we deal with the fact that humans are imperfect, and then as long as we rely on human beings, then we're going to get hurt. And so betrayal is sort of definitely an advanced level of cognitive dissonance between human beings, because someone should be accountable enough to avoid ever betraying another human being. Betraying is a true cognitive, I know what I'm doing, I'm going to benefit myself, and in benefiting myself, I'm going to betray another person so that I can gain something. Now, it is possible to betray someone and you don't know it. But you need to go see that episode if you want a real personal view on things. The things that go through there is a personal family level betrayal, a spousal relationship partner betrayal, and business betrayal. Those are the three main categories in that. But this one's going to be a lot bigger and a lot more macro and a lot have a higher altitude of observation. I know it might seem a little dry, might seem a little less interesting, but bear with me on this. Here is the premise of our class, of our story, of our discussion. We're all the teachers, okay? We're waking up. We're waking up to a world that is full of corruption, full of really bad people, full of narcissistic, selfish people, full of people who live on the cobblestones of, or I said lily pads, where they jump across the lake on something, and it's all betrayal all the way across. It's just how they live their lives, and they care not about your feelings or anything, because perhaps they're so reptilian and primitive in their mind. There's no empathy whatsoever. Some are feral in their betrayal, in that they have no perception of behaving any other way. For the feral, it is a matter of survival, not a matter of social preference, a personal preference of how to behave. And so, you know, let me just rewind here to give ourselves, let's say we're zooming in on Earth from that other place that we don't know if exists or not. And we're an alien race, let's just say, for a brief moment, or perhaps we're a soul. a soul that has been there before, but we've been inside of a human body, and so we had limitations to our perception, capability, perspective. But now we're in this realm of all-knowing. We don't necessarily know it all at the same time, but we can definitely get the God facts when we need it. And we do graphical overlays on top of the world as it spins in front of us, or however that spin happens. And we start to realize, you know, I think the first layer would be, who does more harm? Like, give me a red tint over every soul that lives by do harm, betrayal, selfishness, narcissism. Now, of that red sector, wherever that is on the surface of the planet, now overlay, who is in power? Who controls more human beings through adopted paradigms of mankind? Because we're adopting all the control mechanisms. No one's forcing us to do anything in this world. We are adopting our control mechanisms. I think there would be a massive overlap between those two groups, the evil, the ignorant, the selfish, the greedy, the truly evil, devilish people, and those that run the world. And it's not a cop-out. I know a lot of folks might say, you know, you're just angry you don't have their money, their stuff. It's like, man, honestly, I probably have nearly all the stuff that I want in this world, or I've had it and I've gotten rid of it. Are there things that I would like to do that I can't just immediately do? Ah, sure. But, you know, I wouldn't want that to go away. I wouldn't want to be them and be like, oh, geez, I've experienced everything. Now it's time to get super evil and do things that are ultra taboo and horrible for the world so that I can get a little, you know, adrenaline high here and there. No thanks, man. No thanks. But, you know, we are all participating in the Great Awakening in a way that we are trying to spread truth and we're trying to spread lucidity such that we can see evil. So it sticks out like a sore thumb instead of being able to coexist with us and just simply go unnoticed, unpunished, unhindered. And there's a lot of steps going on right now where a lot of very evil people are getting detained, but I can almost assure you the majority of them are still at large. The human imperfection subject matter goes a little bit like this. We know we are imperfect. Everyone's imperfect. So that leaves us with a very interesting problem. We know this and we sort of overlook it. At the same time, our hubris, our arrogance as man, ends up protecting a bunch of lies. It's interesting. We don't want to admit that we are a part of a human race, a species that is flawed. A lot of us think, well, geez, at least we can do better than the evil people that are seemingly running this planet. And that would probably be a very true statement. But we also have our super weaknesses, mentally, physically, whatever it might be. Perhaps you're able to conceal and hide the thorn in your side, as Paul wrote in the Bible. But if it eats up your life and if it eats up your consciousness, then it's probably something that frustrates you. Now, let me give you a little analogy that's very interesting for the brain. If we built, let's say, a machine, the everlasting gobstopper machine, and its task is to create everlasting gobstoppers that can then be put in little packages and sold to children to rot their teeth. The machine is supposed to work correctly at all times. If it needs repair or service, we want to be able to anticipate that on a schedule, on a calendar, stop the machine before it actually goes haywire, open it up, replace a spring, a sprocket, get a little bit of oil there, a little bit of this, that, and close it back up again, start it back up again, and we avoid, through maintenance, just like our cars, a blow-up. All right, well, that's our base model for all machines that we use. We don't have a television that sometimes shows the picture and sometimes doesn't. Right? A blender that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I mean, all of us have had bad devices in the world, but then, of course, we're wishing that the 99.9% of the rest of the world's machines were ours, right? We don't want to have a broken thing. But now, look at humanity, the human race. We're organic. We are object-oriented, right? We are chaos. And we are flawed. Meaning, as much as we would like to control ourselves, our mental thoughts, our desires, our patience pools, our goal acquisition, our planning, we can't at any point in time be perfect. And so the whole fabric of society, based on humanity, is an approximation at best. But don't we make laws and rules which are perfect by design, and we treat it as if it is something that should be followed to the T forever? The Garden of Eden was a flawed story. It dramatizes, and people cover for it by getting a little, in my opinion, ludicrous about the subject matter. But God makes the Garden of Eden, builds first Adam, and then obviously he got bored. So God miscalculated Adam's ability to be, celibate and in a solitary situation. So he puts him to sleep, takes a rib, gives it to the woman, makes woman, boom, everything's great. For some weird arbitrary reason, he picked an apple tree and said, just don't eat off this tree, which is a perfect rule. Rules are perfect. Humans aren't. God knew he made humans imperfect. And so eventually, someone, it just happened to be Eve, ate from this tree. God is surprised because God is a moron in the Bible. And then, of course, there's all this punishment, and they're banished from Eden. The menstrual cycle and birth cycle of women is painful and annoying, and it's all the woman's fault, of course. And then that thus forges the initial spawn of man, plus all the Old Testament folks. And now we think we only live in this tumultuous world of evil, and we're not in God's presence because of this original sin event. As I'm told, only Western Christians believe in that. Eastern Christianity does not believe in that. Good for them. Good for them. But now, that story aside, we have all these weird things in our world, don't we? They will say this phrase, and I'm not trying to write everyone a blank check, but they say this phrase quite a bit. The ignorance of the law is no excuse. Okay, name a human being on this planet that knows all the laws of their local district, and I mean all of them. All the ordinances, all the laws, anything that leads to punishment or any type of penalty. And I will put all the money that I have, all of the possessions, all that I love on a bet that not a single human being exists in any modern built-up first world society who would know all the laws of both local, district, federal, international, the ones that control us. You're supposed to be able to file your taxes and not make any mistakes when the tax code is bigger than the legal code. Ridiculous. So you're supposed to hire professionals to do it. You are forced to part with money to hire professionals, of which you may not have that money to part with in the first place, to file your taxes. And then they sell insurance against the fact that they don't know all the laws of tax code either. So how do you go into a court of law and lose a case against these complex situations? Now, we have several laws that are so basic and so linked to common law that we do know them. You're not supposed to kill anybody, just outright. You can defend yourself. You're not supposed to rape anybody. We know these things. Those are the big sort of 10 commandments that we know. I think everyone knows at least 10 laws that will keep most of man from hurting man. Don't steal. Then you have metaphysical ones out of religion, which are aimed at improving your life, which is not to covet. But we're living in this world as inferior to perfection beings. We are amazing beings. I mean, no one would argue that humanity is one of the most amazing things ever created by a creator. If you're an evolutionist, it should just be more mind-blowing. Like an atheist evolutionary person who cannot believe in a central consciousness of any kind thinks that everything came out of nothing. They should literally be walking around like they're completely high all the time, in my opinion. I mean, they should be able to lean, you know, just crawl in the grass and just pick up a blade of grass and just, oh my God, this came from nothing. There was no matter, no energy in the universe, and then kaboom, it all existed. I mean, come on, seriously. IQ test failure right there. So now think about this. How many of you have seen a story or you have experienced this personally where there were rules? And you saw someone break the rules. And they could be fairly bad rules. I mean, maybe not capital murder of some sort, right? But even in some of those cases, you might say you understand. And as a jury, jury member, you may actually cut the guy or girl some slack because the circumstances start to define a little bit better. And the empathy that you would do the same thing in the same situation starts to manifest and you let the person go. How many times have you seen a person who has gone through perhaps major drug addiction? And they get out of their circle, they go do their time, whatever they do. Maybe they lost everything in their life, maybe they lost some things in their life. But then they go and they learn how to rehabilitate other people with drug addiction. And it's because they intimately understand what addiction feels like on a mental level, on a physical level. They even understand how detox works and how it makes you feel. And those people are magical to the people of their same species, right? I mean, if we're human species, maybe it's a subspecies of that particular problem. But they understand and they empathize and they save lives all the time. They keep people out of jail. They keep people from ruining their lives, right? How many times have we had movie stars that you find out later on serve time in jail for big things, murder, that kind of stuff, and they regretted what they did and they served their time and now they're out and they became gentle giants afterwards because they realize they made a mistake. And you know, every single day they wake up, they remember that mistake. It humbles them every single day. And so they just try to brighten the world where they took, you know, where they introduced a lot of darkness into the world. It's different people. I'm sure the family that perhaps lost a loved one may never have sympathy for that person. But what can you do when you make that kind of mistake? So now what if you got the job of architecting society? And this is where we're going to get into sort of two different forks of thought, in my opinion. One is the group of people that would be the majority of the world, the 99% pool of the world that wants society to grow to the next level, will do anything to fix society. Like education would be your first agenda. Above all, we got to make sure the kids that grow up don't grow up into lies, don't grow up into, you know, lusting after material objects, getting oversexed, you know, getting their very biological binary gender all confused because all the stuff's being thrown at them when they're trying to figure out how to meld with society. So there's that group. And then there's this other group that is the controlling group, the group that has use their wealth and serendipitous fortune to undereducate everyone, to keep everyone at bay, because they believe in their hearts that if we got educated and wealthy, that we would simply remove them. Now, of course, we all know that they could be replaced. The second we get rid of those people, other greedy people, defective human beings will go up and, you know, power corrupts absolute theory starts to show up again. There's been countless times in history where a king or a queen is displaced by their family member or a conquering party with the intent to fix everything, and they immediately find the burden of the king. And they go right back into the issues. And I think the burden of the king, which they just say king in the analogy, could be the burden of the queen as well. But they find out the society is utterly chaotic in their fear structure and their lusts for things. And as long as their society lusts for something that they can have, which seems to be a common thread of imperfection in a human being, then no matter how much you spoil and bless your people, they always want something else. And eventually you're going to run out of resources, run out of time to ever provide that on your watch. And so they start to resent you. Now, I don't know if there's ever been a time in history, perhaps some of you history buffs can enlighten all of us, where a ruler brought themselves down to the level of the people, and so that they didn't have a house that was better than anyone else's house. They didn't have money that was exorbitantly higher than everyone else's money. Food that was better than their food, etc., etc. I don't know that that's ever happened, but if it has happened, it'd be interesting to see how long that society lasted. I do believe several times in history we have had untouched societies that went for probably hundreds, if not thousands of years in a utopia, in a blissful state. And they were simply conquered by those that were aggressive, because the utopian state would probably have reached a point. I think Egypt was definitely recorded in history as being this, but it, you know, then again, we simply don't know. And a lot of the history is just wrong and made up to sell books, to fund universities, to just fill up a gap so that we don't live with the void of history. But it looks like perhaps they might have created a utopian existence, and then when the neighboring factions came in, which hadn't achieved such bliss, they're looking at the haves. They consider themselves the have-nots, which they quite frankly probably were. And they're more savage, and they're more in the primitive state. So they attack. Well, the utopian state, did they keep weapons, you know, in any great supply? Do they even train an army? I don't know, maybe not. And if they don't, guess what's going to happen? The world is going to roll back however many thousands of years, tens of thousands of years it took for that one utopia to exist. And that scenario is before you have elite people, ruling class people, with methodologies to dominate societies by design, right? You have your money changers. First, it was literally the masons. Those that could build things ended up ruling areas because, my God, you wanted better shelters and water wells and all kinds of other facilities that they knew how to build. I mean, imagine you lived in an area that had really bad weather. It's either super cold in the wintertime, super hot in the summertime. You had monsoons, hurricanes, whatever. And they were able to build structures out of stone that could withstand all that punishment. And then you would chill out and relax as the storm rolls over. You want some water? Well, geez, we're going to build a well that provides water. And we're going to build a building right on top of it, so we'll always have our water right there in our house. The Romans come along and they create aqueducts and plumbing and all kinds of beautiful things. So we've had these masons run the world first. But then the monetary system came along and the money changers started wiping out the masons. Even in the Bible, Jesus turned over the tables of the money changers. Well, even if that story is completely fake, the authors of the book were acknowledging to you and to me that the money changers were blasphemous and in plenty, operating inside temples of God. So now, I want you to imagine that you become king or queen. Or maybe I shouldn't say it. Maybe you become the president, and you're either male or female, doesn't matter. And someone says to you, okay, this is going to be a golden era, potentially. Because the setup's going to be this. You will have every resource to gather information about the societies around the world. You're going to have books of knowledge about past successes, past failures, and all you have to do as a human being is correlate the solutions with the problems, and we're off to the races. You're in charge. people, you need staff, we got it for you. Anything you need. I'm going to suggest that no matter how unbelievable your intentions are, with just what I gave you there, it's only a matter of time before you fail. Let's just say I give you also a youth serum where it's not adrenochromes and it's not baby blood. It's some little nice sandwich made out of healthy foods is going to keep you alive for 500 to 1,000 years. You can stop taking it whenever you want, whenever you think you want to start aging again and die naturally. You have that too. Now, obviously, right off the bat, you could probably start fixing things left and right. Pull all the patents that have been hidden. Start fixing, you know, food distribution, wealth distribution. You know, make sure there's jobs for everyone out there. Maybe even erase money like the guy in a Zeitgeist movie suggested. Some areas are going to go really quickly. Some areas are going to go really slowly. Some are going to want no change, even though they have hardships. And they're sort of barbaric because maybe they live in a jungle and they're just freaked out of us, the civilized world. You start coming at them like that weird little island. I forgot what it is. Is it outside India? Is that where it is? Maybe, no, it's outside New Zealand, right? Or something like that. That weird island where some of you guys are shouting at the screen right now. Where they just have in this crazy indigenous, I don't mean to say crazy as in crazy, crazy, but like just this wild indigenous race of spear throwers, and they have killed tourists that went over there and acted like absolute morons. One of the explorers supposedly raped one of their girls and they never forgot it, of course. At one level, I totally support them, right? But they don't want any change. So maybe just black that little area out. Say, I don't need to help those people. It's good. They're good. Maybe your methodology is to ask everyone what they want. But then again, you're going to have citizens that disagree. And in comes chaos. One person thinks that another country should just walk across the border and just cross-populate. The other people go, keep them back because they got more land than we do and they don't need our stuff and blah, 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 blah. Then you have the old and the new, right? The old and the young, I should say. The young are going to come up with different ideas. They're going to grow straight up into, hopefully, more of this utopian experience, while the old remember the old days and they fear oversight. They fear promises, right? They can't have good news. I know plenty of friends of mine that you cannot tell them any good news. It's unbelievable. You can say, this is getting better. And they're like, no, it's not. Because if it's any better, then they're lying, you know? And it's like, wow, something went on in that childhood, right? Everyone always betrayed them. Or they're trying to be a martyr 24/7. That's an old little arc. You sit down after the chaos starts to show its ugly little algorithm. And so you're smart. You bring in your finest minds, whoever that is. Maybe it's a global group. One delegate, 10 delegates, you have a gigantic conference call. And you say, folks, we need to deal with this chaos. We have to figure out a way to make everybody happy. We're the human race. And desiring different things doesn't mean we're flawed. It just means we desire different things. We have all had different upbringings. It's the beauty of the world, right? Beauty of God's design is that there's so many different paths we could take that we don't recreate boredom necessarily, unless we covet boredom. We covet the same patterns, and then we punish everyone else because we're bored to death. What starts to happen in my mind when I think about this is sort of a taboo thing in our world starts to show promise. I don't know if this would ever work. I don't know if what I'm about to say, and believe me, I know what I'm saying is absolutely countercultural to what we are trying to do in the Great Awakening, is absolutely the counter goal of what we're trying to do here. And I'm not suggesting we do it, but I think we have to talk about it and analyze it to see why we wouldn't do it. And again, this is in a fantasy universe where the bad people have all been eradicated, however that is. Whether or not their DNA has been flushed from the world, or whether or not we have them in caverns rotting, or we've already buried them. All of their DNA is gone. we do run the risk of it being recreated through just sheer serendipity, and we can almost guarantee with 10 billion people on the world, let's say we add a few more, that this kind of stuff will happen, but we have to be able to monitor and see that. The hope would be that education would bring that number way, way, way down. And especially if we were to educate about corruption, that would be another big way to avoid things. We don't teach corruption, do we? We don't teach the kids of the world about bankers destroying everything. When you learn history in high school and middle school, they don't tell you the victors write history. I mean, maybe your teacher might have said that, but they don't really go into it. He or she is not allowed to do that. You can't teach compound interest in high school. You're just supposed to get a credit card the second you hit 18 and then go bankrupt immediately and then try to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life as the world mandates you have a card for this and a card for that. But here's the taboo thought. What if a computer, a very powerful computer, could do at least data analysis on how to satisfy chaos? One, to track it. Tracking it's going to be super difficult. Computers need big machine data sets to figure out whether or not it can learn from the data set. The way that big machine learning works is that you have every possible metric you could study. Hunger, education, suffering. I mean, anything you can possibly conceive of as the human condition, which would be damn near an infinite data set. And then second to second, as fast as you can bring in the data on each individual, where they're physically located in the world, whether or not they're happy with their life or whatever. And if you figure out they're unhappy, why are they unhappy? Now, man manifests almost infinite bad habits that a computer would not want to try to correct for, but it would want to figure out. I mentioned this little thing. I'm going to give you a little example because I mentioned it several times on different shows to demonstrate the human psyche. Either you or someone you know, I think every human being's done this, whether or not you realize it consciously or not. In the incessant need to eat, you will eat every different type of food you can get your hands on, whether it's just from your kitchen or all the restaurants, fast food places, sit-down restaurants. You know, the richer you are, the worse this gets. And you will expire your desire for all food in the same moment, and such that you've got plenty of money in your pocket to eat anything in the world. You can go to a Gordon Ramsay restaurant with a Michelin star or two, or you could eat at the local fast food place. And you don't want any of it, because you're bored of every single palate option that you could have. So it turns into nothing more than a physical satiation of your body. I need to stop feeling hungry. So I'm going to eat something I really don't like. And then, you know, what actually ends up taking place is you stop feeling hungry and you don't even care what you eat. It's almost every single experience in your entire life, no matter how good the meal is. So our little AI, actually, it wouldn't necessarily be an AI, but because we're not looking to the computer to necessarily make the decision. We're looking to the computer to help us gather data so that we, as human beings, with full empathy and intelligence and chaotic Captain Kirk genes, you know, where we could actually say, you know what, I think we just need to go over here, completely different direction. I think that'll solve this problem now that we know this data is here. But the world's a different place. There's Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, there's Equator Hemisphere, countries that are very warm, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, areas that are colder. We have coastal regions, we have internal regions, we have a little bit internal on a continent, and then we have like the Midwest of America, where it's dead center. It's 1,500 miles in either direction to hit the coast. Everyone has different history. They have cultural history, which is related to their country, their nationalistic barriers. We have foods that we love that we don't want to disappear. We have styles of beer and clothing and art and music that we don't want to disappear. So we don't want to streamline the entire earth to this gray ball of gray people where we are just, you know, dressing in white sheets every day and going to work. We want to maintain the diversity. But society is imperfect. So if you've ever been that aunt or uncle or grandmother or grandfather, and you're sort of passing down some wisdom to your offspring, whether it be your grandchildren or your children, you will have a situation, especially as an elder, you'll have a young person come in and they're just flustered to death. You write these all the time in sitcoms and television shows and movies where the kid is just completely chaotic about something, and you look at it from your perspective, it doesn't mean anything to you. But you try to empathize with that situation. You try to remember what it was like when you were that young. And if you're really lucky, you've got one sentence you can say to calm the soul of that child. Something that gives them the higher altitude perspective of the problem. One of the worst things that happens in America, and again, I think the controllers love this, is that our children, our males and our females, it doesn't matter what they think they are, they surrender their self-identity to others. The first thing they surrender to is the group. They get into a group thing. Does everyone think that I look good? Do I look pretty? Do the clothes that I wore at a high enough status that I'm going to be treated properly in the tribe, right? And then it goes down to a finer level of granularity where we surrender our opinion of ourselves to someone we fall in love with. Whether they know we exist or not is irrelevant. My daughter was really young. I said, look, there's been a ton of studies in the world that prove that men typically on an emotional level mature a lot slower than females, especially little boys, because they're all into their computers and their video games and their Legos or whatever it is. But nothing's going to stop a girl from arbitrarily falling in love with that boy. And the girl is thinking about all of the emotional aspects, the right brain part of it, as the Egyptians beautifully taught their people. You go back a few hundred years and you've got the hunter-gathering thing, which is the boy's responsibility. Get out there with your father, your uncle, whatever, and catch our food. Don't care if it's a fish, a squirrel, a deer, you got to catch it. In Africa, you're supposed to catch lions, man. I mean, it's some ballsy stuff, right? So imagine surrendering yourself to this mechanical male who's going through a rite of passage to prove that he has the upper body strength and the coordination and the skills to prove himself as a young man to the tribe. He comes back to the tribe and they say, the girl comes up to him, oh, you have such a nice smile. I love your eyes. I love the sound of your voice. I like the way you do that. I like your big arms or whatever it is. And he's maybe attracted to the girl, but maybe before he even gets to the point of falling in love, he's like, what? What are you talking about? My eyes? Do you realize I almost died today taking down a bison? A boar of some sort? I don't care about my eye color. All I care about is what's going to potentially happen to me tomorrow. Am I going to live or die? Because the other day, you know, what's in his name, son died because the boar got him. The lion ate his head or whatever. Totally different priority set. In the modern era, obviously, it's a lot different. The various addictions for boys and the addictions for girls. Whether you perceive yourself as one or the other, doesn't matter. You could be gay, but you're just in the other pile. That's all. Same piles, same categories of life. I hope what's coming into focus here is that perhaps our goal for this blissful world where all things are fixed, one, on an academic level, it seems unattainable. Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek world, wow, how many evolutions of man are we going to have to go through before we can even conceive of the Star Trek universe? There's no money. We have conquered all science. There's still guys that, as Benjamin Sisko's father, who ran the soul food joint in New Orleans. I think that's brilliant. He's in the future. Like, what is it, 400 years in the future? And he's taking care of a little soul food joint. Sisko can't wait to get back to his dad's place. His son can't wait to go back. well, they're flying around in spaceships conquering the universe, or, you know, he's doing Deep Space Nine. But, you know, those two living side by side is a real interesting concept because they seem to be the two extremes. Now, I've seen about every Star Trek episode probably 3 to 5 times, and I don't remember any episodes that really accounted for undiscovered tribes on America at that point. Or, sorry, not America, the Earth at that point. Seems like everyone had been discovered, everyone had been integrated. I did a whole episode on Star Trek in season 1, I believe, and it haunts me every day because I think that is really the most clinical, interesting, emotional, at the same time it's clinical, left brain, right brain representation of Earth that we've ever had in any fictional story in this timeline. And it seems as if that's a goal. I mean, to me, it seems like, well, geez, if we got to that level, it doesn't mean there's not theft and murder and all the other things that happen in this world, but man, isn't that really the most balanced version of humanity that we have ever conceived of? For me, the answer is yes. But now, when I think about the chaos of human frailty and imperfection, a part of you know that our mistakes make us who we are, our hardships make us who we are. I'm going to digress to make a point here. There is an animated Japanese series which was just introduced to me. I've consumed it all now. It's called Evangelion. It's on Netflix. The first 26 episodes are on Netflix, and then the 2 45-minute movies that were made after the series, I think it was started around 1995. I don't know how many years it ran. Very amazing Japanese anime. I almost feel foolish that I'm seeing this in 2019 when I could have been seeing this in my mid-20s. I just didn't have any access to that, even though a lot of my video game friends were just preaching Jap anime. But it was always Ghost in the Shell or Akira or something like that. It wasn't Evangelion. Now, after that, they waited like 15 years or whatever, or at least 13 years or something like that, and they made so far 3 movies that seemingly remake the 26 episodes plus the 2 little short movies. The modern films, at least the first 2, the third one is really strange and didn't turn me on that much. But the first 2 2-hour films that were made in the more recent, since 2007, I believe, are mind-blowing animation. And I mean, wow, how this slipped by, how people went, oh, go see Avatar, but I'm not going to tell you about Evangelion. It's like, man, it is brilliant. But in the story, okay, which is where I'm aiming at this, it's where Pacific Rim stole everything. And I think respectfully so. And I think in the third film, they stole something from Pacific Rim to just go, well, if you're going to steal our stuff, we'll steal your stuff. I'm not going to tell you much of the story, but I'll say that there are these sort of robots called Avas that kids who are specifically 14 years old, if they are proven to be able to sync with the computer in the Ava, they can operate it. And just like Pacific Rim, who stole everything from Evangelion, there are these big, they call them angels, fall out of the sky, show up. And these kids driving these Avas have to destroy these angels. And if you're already sensing the bizarre symbology there, you're already on to the story. But this storyline deals with the entire human race and its potential eventualities based on Plan A, Plan B, Plan C, and the fact that the world itself can't agree on what those plans should be. Not all of the areas of the world are informed about what the eventualities could be. I don't even think that the full spectrum of what these angels are is known to the entire world. But what's interesting about Evangelion is that through watching it, it will sort of boil up to the top. your personal perspective of where we are, what we are, and what we could be. It deals with this human imperfection on a level that is profound. Obviously, dealing with a bunch of 14-year-old kids, of which there's only three primary kids. Eventually, they toy with two others, but the main story is three of these kids. And boy, the conspiracies and twists in this thing are never-ending. And the impact of the twist, it's not just that they reveal a twist in the story, it severely impacts everything from that point forward. Like a really good story turn. The guy who made this is an utter genius. But it really got me thinking. I mean, it really got me to look at this whole thing from a much higher perspective of, geez, we are, you know, there's the whole paradigm of curing the symptom or curing the cause. We know that curing the symptom is only something that we should do if the symptom is about to kill the patient, right? Well, you obviously are doing something and you're sick. So let's get you unsick, and then let's figure out how you're getting sick, and let's stop the cause of the event. Well, isn't it amazing that I think you could take some mid-level IQ human beings who are still very smart, and I'm saying this to make a point that you don't need uber geniuses, so I'm saying us, right? We're in the middle between super genius and normal person. Who's asleep? Let's just put it that way. So if you're part of the awakening, I consider you to be flying somewhere in the middle on this range. I think without much debate, like if we got together and did a think tank, I think in the first half hour, if I said, write down, first we present all the problems in some overhead projection of some sort, and then we say, okay, you all have a piece of paper and a pen. I want you to write down the single thing that you think would start addressing all of the issues that are plaguing the world, the discourse that we have between each other, the fear and xenophobia that we've built between individuals. And again, we don't necessarily have to agree to distribute every human being evenly around the world. We like going in different places and seeing different architecture and different traditions. That's not the point with what I'm trying to say. But I think that almost unanimously, if not unanimously, everyone would write down education. Education is the key. Now, some of it might be, we would say, okay, now we're agreeing on education. But what education? Well, a lot of us would probably separate it, and I'm going to give it some crude descriptors, but I would say one of them would be the physical, and the other one would be the metaphysical. What would be the physical? I would say the physical would be reading, writing, and arithmetic. You got to know how to do those three things. The metaphysical would be perhaps your being, your etiquette, your ability to communicate with those skills. What are you going to say now that you know how to say it? What solutions and equations are you going to try to solve now that you know how to solve any equation, etc., etc.? Each region, each individual group is going to probably pick something different that relates to their needs. Some are going to pick things that are of their immediate need. You know, they don't have a great home, so they want to build a better home. They only have certain supplies they can afford, and certain supplies they can only get their hands on. So they're going to calculate something, design something that works with what they have. Some people might create a great mud hut. Some people might create a good wood house. Some people might create a good girder reinforced cinder block, sand filled soundproof home. It's going to be different. Some people are going to want to solve global problems like hunger. Basic health comes after that. You know, malnutrition is probably responsible for almost every single ailment on planet Earth, right? Even in the first world where everyone seems to be catching cancer like it's the cold. I just talked to a good friend of mine and we were reviewing, in fact, I talked to two friends of mine in the last 24 hours. One of my friends has developed a diet in Hawaii, and now he has saved lives over there. And unintentionally, he's gaining a reputation among the locals, and he's trying to deal with it because he doesn't really want to be and has never wanted to be in the limelight of anyone's consciousness. He likes being a recluse. He's got a full family and all, a million friends. He's not like alone, but he likes to keep his world fairly quarantined because that way he can keep it pure. But his deeds are sort of gaining his attention. So he's telling me his diet is curing everyone of everything, from cancer to diabetes to lupus to all kinds of things. People in severe conditions about to die are just being reversed. I told him about our experience on Deep Thoughts with B17C, Gershom, all these other techniques. He was laughing his butt off because he and I hadn't talked in probably about 7 years. And, you know, we're the same kind of people. We're like, we're blood brothers. And so we go off and do the same thing because that's what we're made out of. Our theme in life is the same. Hunais, we're Hunais, which I guess is Hawaiian for blood brother. But I talked to another friend of mine here in LA, and the subject of cancer came up, and he's like, man, he goes, I have so many friends of mine who have died of cancer. And he goes, this wasn't the way it was when I was a kid. My parents didn't lose all their friends in their 40s. To cancer, and now it's everywhere. And he said very specifically, he said, look, he said, the weird thing about it is that, he goes, my friends will get diagnosed and they're dead within a couple months. He goes, this stuff is super aggressive and nobody knows they have it until they have it, and then poof, they're gone. Which is why you should take your C, time release, powdered Solaris C every day, 1,000 milligrams at least, and probably at least 100 milligrams of B17 every day. Chase it off every single day of your life, you know. So let's say you've gotten to this point in the episode. It's about an hour in. And you're on board with what I'm saying. Yep. Society is super chaotic, super imperfect. We're probably never going to get on the same page no matter how much we succeed, unless we become the Borg. So how do we perceive society now? And do the people that control the world have this perception hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago? Of course, there's scholars who got this, you know, this the same number of years ago. You know, they saw this a long time ago. I know scholars that have observed this sort of thing and gave up on a society immediately, or at least gave up on the problem, not necessarily blaming society, but saying, well, humans aren't perfect. There's a movement for transhumanism, to embed machines within man to hopefully totally control humanity. Well, any of you that understand humanity and the fact that we are Homo sapiens sapien would understand that transhumanism is going to undo humanity. We will cease to exist and we will become machine. Kurzweil is trying to map the brain into a computer. Elon Musk is right there like, I'm going to do it first just because I want to, right? So let's say that you've lived quite a bit of life already, and so what you're able to do with your life, the remaining decades of your life, it's slightly compromised because you're not a young whippersnapper anymore. So you've been thinking about this whole thing by looking at children and going, wow, you have a chance, but I can't get this big thought into your mind because you're young. There's so much paradigm of understanding humanity that you don't have, which is the base levels of this platform of thinking that are going to take you a couple decades, if you're a gifted kid, to get into your brain such that you understand imperfection. And I think I'm probably over-exaggerating. They'd be looking at a two-year-old for that to be completely true. But I think an entry-level kid who's fairly awake at 18 could start thinking about this, but definitely 20, 22, you could start thinking about it. And would it improve society and our chances of success if this conversation were to start entering the consciousness of man? We start having these conversations. And I want you to know that when I make episodes like this, my hope for all of you, and this is, I just put this way, this is what I see in my brain every time I tell you guys something like this. One, I hope that you've already had these conversations and you're way beyond me. But if this is new to you, any one of these kind of existential concepts that really control who we are, who you are, I see you at dinner with your loved ones, whether it be your friends or your immediate family, and you're starting to have these conversations. Maybe this episode rings in your brain, and you're like, hey, I watched this crazy nut, you know, on YouTube, and he was talking about this, and I think it was really interesting because I thought about it for a couple weeks, and now I've got some additional thoughts he didn't mention. Maybe there are some ways to address this, or it just kind of eats you up inside because you're trying to solve it. You see what I'm saying. Maybe you've already thought of this again. But you're trying to pick the brain of the other person across the table, and you're like, do you have any ideas? I mean, let me just throw this at you and see if you can just knee-jerk something out that is someone relaxing their mind, taking the consciousness of the universe, and then poof, there goes the solution. Or a solution to get us to the next level for the next solution. We know this whole technology big brother thing is really scary, isn't it? Because we have all of these amazing solutions that we could get into. We could make computers predict crime. You know, they already do it, but I mean, we could really make that. We can make an AI that, as long as we give all of our information to it and it's sequestered away from being queried by random deep staters, then we could potentially have an AI that even runs on our phone, runs on our local system, runs in some, you know, implant in our brain or whatever, and it simply sits there and goes, you're having this thought, and you seem to be having that thought a lot, and this is all private between you and the AI, and they're like, hey, you might try this, because we've got a million other case studies, maybe a billion other case studies of people who went through this, and just like a computer that will play chess, what is it doing? It is predicting the moves and just playing the game forward. It just builds the whole game based on the last turn that the human made to see how it can beat the human's the human opponent. We could do that if we could get the computers put together such that they're private to us and they're guaranteed by design to be, I don't know, blockchained or whatever it is to keep everyone else's noses out of our business. But anyone who's a technician and a hacker knows that, well, as long as the information is being submitted and transferred back to you, it can be duplicated into other databases where they can start stealing the information. Hence the surveillance state that we live in today. But isn't it sad that we can't engage a solution? Let's just say we could pull that off. And I'm not saying we have the complete know-how to pull that off, but I think big machine learning is amazing, man. I mean, just the statistical analysis of data and prediction is phenomenal. So we're going to have to address the organic method at the current state because we can't trust the technological methods because man is still allowing man to have class structure. We're still allowing people to be over us. We have people committing massive crimes on this planet. Some are absolutely hideous and they're being arrested slowly. And I'm sure all the ones that are super powerful, we'll sit there and watch them go into court. We know certain people have done horrific things in their lifetime. We know it. And they're going to go to court. And because they had a certain position in government or they're rich, they're going to walk, and we're going to know that they walk, and they're going to get to live their full life being a complete devilish person. It sucks, but it's true, right? But one of the little subplots of this episode is to say, are we ready to engage any of the solutions based on the fact that this isn't something we talk about on a regular basis? We don't talk about the problems in a sophisticated manner, do we? So is man asleep at a different level? We knew we were asleep with history. We were asleep with conspiracy to control the world. That was the first sort of kindergarten version of waking up. And then when you wake up, you get to the next level. And the next level, I think, looks like this episode. It's definitely a future stage, I think. We start to look at our own frailty and we go, geez, what are we going to do about this? We wouldn't want God to come down and make us perfect. That would take away all free choice. That would take away a destiny that is determined by you. But now, as we close off this episode, let's think about it this way. if you believe in a creator, then these sort of questions are sort of like annoying and painful to consider. You know, we had a listener report in on an episode, and he shared his current life situation. And he did all the right things as a human being, as far as we know. And he has been met with betrayal at least twice in his little paragraph, and misfortune of the ultimate kind, losing a loved one. And he said, look, man, my life is really messed up right now, right this very second. And we've all been in those situations to some degree. And it's hard not to think, and I might make an episode about this, but let's just put it on the end of this one to bumper it up, that your God has forsaken you to suffering, left you for this world of pain. Now, for those of you who watch the show a lot, you know that I have an episode on reincarnation, and I perceive suffering and death in a completely different way. But boy, I find myself in these situations where I'm like, God, how can you let these people do what they do? I mean, yeah, all these kids might reincarnate who are, you know, part of Epstein's little thing. Let's say if they lost their life in the process. But for the ones that didn't lose their life, which I think is hopefully the majority of them, they live a scarred life. And, you know, scars lead to more scars. The parent who's an alcoholic who beats his kids usually creates kids that drink alcohol and beat their kids or their wives or whatever, all the above. And so that algorithm, if you really play it up, is a little frightening, because you think as an astute observer of society and of reality, it could be this psychological version of the flu. Now, as I've said several times on the show, what you need to know about overpopulation, it is an impossibility to be overpopulated on any given island, continent, or planet, because influenza is in every living being, and it's dormant. And the more that influenza gets in contact with other influenza dormant strands, the more it touches and touches and touches and touches and touches, and the more that rapidly fires, it transforms into a deadly virus and kills off human beings, birds, everything. So maybe, take flu, the way the flu virus works, and take evil, and the way that that works. The fear would be that this evil virus starts to spread all over the world. We start having evil as the standard, and what is formerly viewed as being good is now evil, because it's against chaos, it's against suffering. Being happy is the thing you're not allowed to be. And there's all kinds of fictional shows and movies that portray this kind of world, which is why we have to work as human beings to extinguish it. Suffering being the first thing. Suffering comes in all kinds of forms. Certain physical forms are just starvation, a lack of resources. Some countries, at least probably two countries in one giant region, have overpopulated. They need to handle their own shit. It's not up to us to go in there and go, look, either you handle this or we're going to lean out your little herd over here. Or hopefully flu gets a hold of you and does the job for us. But the flu's going to take a while before it really pops like that. It's going to take massive amounts of people. But these people start immigrating all around the world to spread their problem all around the world. That's like a basic physical problem. We worship all of our substance abuse. And what's interesting about it is, you know, in my life, those that are alcoholic or drug addicts of like super drugs, not just marijuana or something like that. I don't know anyone under the influence of weed that's ever been anything more than maybe a little annoying from every once in a while. But certain people drink and they get happy. Certain people get drunk and get really nasty. I make a lot of comments on my show when they get drunk. And obviously, that's not an arc that is part of being good. It's an arc of being evil. that's letting evil infiltrate your body through a chemical abuse of the mind. And again, there's that threshold, there's that little barrier in the sand. Every time you drink, you get closer to that barrier, and you can never go back because you're blowing out your brain cells. So you go, you go, you go, and eventually you're past that point, and you're constantly mentally insane to some degree. And if being mentally insane makes you drink more or do more drugs, then eventually you're going to die. And who do you take out with you? Hopefully nobody. So we all have to look at what we're doing and have a higher in perspective. What kind of frequency are you going to put into the world? Some people live such constant lives of suffering to no fault of their own that they start manifesting their own demise, thus suffering by their own hand. What would stop that? Well, education is the first stage, and then opportunity is the second stage. They have a skill, and they can get employment doing that skill. Hopefully it's one they love, right? Then they see the light. And then, every time they experience something negative, something that makes them feel bad, they look at themselves instead of other people. And so we start building up a fabric that has got a strong reinforcement against evil, against those that would do harm, acts that would be harmful to others, including themselves. But when you think about, G-O-D in the middle of this equation, it's a tough one. We all believe that heaven is this place where it's all going to be awesome and wonderful. Okay, let me pose this little question. If God allows this place to exist in its current chaotic suffering state, why would heaven be different? Does God have one set of rules for us and another set of rules for heaven? Isn't it one of these things where God can't be in the same place with evil? I think that's a very generic, naive statement, but it's all from a particular perspective. But why would he create a bunch of rules up there that are like, no, none of that stuff that you do down there in earth could be done up here in heaven? Well, why, dude? You made both places. If it was not good enough for you up here in heaven, why the hell did you let us sit down there and suffer and on earth? Do you lose free will if you go to heaven in the traditional sense of the definition? God, I hope not. You will eat this, you will dress like this, you will do this profession. Welcome to eternity, motherfucker, I hope not. I've said it several times on this show that my friends, just a few of them, people I've dated, God bless them, they do believe in this dual existence, that we're in this suffering state. In fact, they think that they're suffering and they're just trying to live a noble life until the day they die so they can go up to this other place where no one can hurt them. Meaning they can't be disappointed. Remember, you can be disappointed all by yourself without anyone taking something away from you that you think is yours, right? Well, I thought heaven was going to be this, and it certainly wasn't. And so now you're depressed. You're depressed in heaven, right? But now, what if, like in my episode, The Answer, what if your whole goal, our goal, is just that we have to live like this? We have to deal with this imperfection. Will man ever evolve to a point where imperfection is not a quality of our existence, an attribute of our existence? Your guess is as good as mine. It would seem we would get on the same page. But now, if you study the cabals of the world, all these powerful families that we need to eradicate off the face of the planet, disarm, including all their apparatus to do this, and we need to forbid their apparatus from ever existing again. Oligarchies can't exist anymore. Aristocracies and monarchs, they can't exist anymore. They just can't. You can have wealth, you just can't have the power over other people, because we're going to redo this place hopefully at some point. They participate in the undereducating of the entire world to stay in power. You're never to learn one thing that they do, which is called the scam. They have tons of them, right? Our money system's a scam. All the reasons why we hate each other on Earth is a scam. everything that they do to touch the world is a scam, because it's always to bring push us down and push themselves up. Again, you can't keep your money after your family dies. This government comes and takes half of it. Inheritance tax, it's all around the world. You're not allowed to get rich. Boom and bust cycles, well, those are so you can't get rich. There will be no wealthy people on planet Earth. But they will also be the ones that complain about those people. They have created the nuisance that they hate. You think Macron in France liked all the protesters that went out and protested against him? Now, those are educated, awake people. But Macron's people and his whole Rothschild group would call these people peasants and sheep and cattle, right? The cattle when they have to go to war, and their sheep when they have to listen to public policy. They are creating our problems. And because we don't take them out of power, they continue and continue and continue. Every leader of the free world, in any capacity at all, should be going up to podiums regularly and giving us status updates about the educational improvement of their respective region of the world. All these regions of the world that have dictators, well, they need to rise up and get rid of the dictators and put in elected officials that don't have billionaire estates, right? Now, some billionaires seemingly care about their people. It's amazing. And I guess you can keep your billions as long as you routinely demonstrate that you care about your people and you routinely truly improve their lives. And sometimes we just have growing pains. Russia is a really good example of amazing progress. I mean, if you see Moscow today, oh my God, in St. Petersburg, Monaco needs to lay down and take a nap compared to these two cities. These cities are like booming on an economic level that's crazy. A lot of Arab countries have cities like this, Dubai and those various locations, right? But in Russia, I have learned over the last 2 years that around 2008 to 2010, they had this sort of economic boom in such a way that everyone could buy cars for the first time. Brand new cars, beautiful cars. Every single thing that Europe and America has, they have, right? They have this little box car. I call it the devil car. It's always involved in like horrendous accidents. But their people got cars, and China suffers from this as well. They got cars when they're in their 30s, 40s, and 50s and above, right? So they've never touched a steering wheel in their life. They never touched a car in their life. They didn't grow up like Americans, where we were driving at 14 years old, learning all the rules, learning the do's and don'ts, having parents that also had the same privilege back two or three generations. And so the instruction from our parents and our grandparents was superb. My dad, again, when I was learning how to drive, I said this story two or three times. This is important. I'm on my first drive in my new car, and my father is telling me, while you're driving, because we're driving in a little country town, speed limit's 30 miles an hour, thank God. If it was any faster than 30 miles an hour in this one moment, I would have killed a kid on accident. But my father says, look, I want you to look underneath cars. As you're driving, look underneath cars. And I said, why? And he says, you're going to see footprints or feet, shadows of people behind cars. They're on the other side of the car. You're coming in from the opposite angle. He says, always look underneath cars because you're going to see someone is about to walk out in front of you. As if an angel had given my father that idea. One of those red balls that you get at grade school, right? Goes doink, doink in front of my car. I look underneath the car to my right and I see the two little feet. And I slam on the brakes. And this little kid runs right out in front of my car. I mean, the parents got the worst fucking grade of the day for not telling their kid, don't you run your ass out in front of a street. This is like one of the busiest streets in my hometown, which ain't saying much, but it was enough. And this kid literally is like, in run phase, stopped in front of my car as the ball continues to go across the street. Had I been going any faster, I would have bumped into his body. And who knows what would have happened, right? One of my childhood friends got creamed by a Jeep when I was in kindergarten. He lived, but goddamn it, messed him up. It's the most horrific thing I've ever seen as a child. I watched this kid's face get bashed in by a Jeep fender. But Russia's dealing with now, between 2010 and 2019, they have had, I think it's like five times the vehicles now driving all over Russia. And so they're experiencing a massive amount of car accidents and deaths related to car accidents. I mean, if you just go up Russia car accident videos on YouTube, it will, if you live in Europe or America, your mind will be blown at the amount of ridiculous accidents that were completely preventable by just the basic rules of driving that these adults who just got into a car for the first time violated those rules and lost their lives, killed other people. It's horrendous. And that is sort of a physical version of the mental, metaphysical version of society that we're dealing with today. I've said for over 30 years now, because I felt this as a young man, I said, look, man is just kidding himself about how civilized he is. And by lying to himself, gaining hubris about how sophisticated we are incurring more suffering because we're not cautious. Does that mean we don't launch rockets and drive cars in the desert and Mach 2? No, we do all those things, but we calculate the risk and we're willing to accept the risks if we're getting behind the wheels of these vehicles, right? Of these risks in life. But a lot of the repercussions of what we're doing hurt other people. And there are individuals who are doing this who are very wealthy, we know. And there are countries that are seemingly not caring about anything. And they're going to punish the entire world for their craziness, right? Again, it was announced just before the Olympics that were held, I believe, in Brazil or Argentina or one of those two countries that they had sold their whole rainforest to the Chinese to be clear-cut and sent to China to be stored. Now, in China's defense, I do not know what their intent is with the rainforest, but you can't cut the fucking thing down without totally destroying the entire ecosystem, which has taken however many billions of years it took, you know, whenever we were created, who the hell knows, because it existed before we existed. And so all that life is going to disappear, even if you plant trees in its place, unless there's some very beautifully balanced methodology, which it won't be. Right? There's no way to make it economical. Okay, you're going to cut down every other tree like they do in Washington State now. Maybe they have a master plan. Haven't heard it. I did hear that in China they got their army together and they were planting like millions and millions of trees. I think that's awesome. Keep going, guys, right? Please do that with everything else you do, but don't clear cut freaking your oxygen machine. And then at the Olympics, during the intro, they complained about the fact that global warming was real. Oh, really? Why don't you cut down all the fucking things that make CO2 and oxygen that we use to breathe? You want to mess up the entire atmosphere? Why don't you destroy the atmosphere machines all over Earth called trees and plants? So we have some ridiculous things that are going on that we need to heighten the awareness of. And, you know, all these kids protesting all this stupid crap. I mean, not Paris things. Those are good things. But, you know, stupid political party stuff. It's like, guys, get yourself a decent movement and save the fucking planet, would you? Because just pick an agenda. And spare me your global warming crap. Just preserve Gaia, Mother Earth, as what she is. Bring it back. Restore it. Protect it. Develop the plans. Go get college degrees that will figure out how China could cut down the rainforest without hurting a single turtle or a spider or whatever the hell it is, right? I guess one of the last imperfections we really have is our mental imperfection to find the truth, right? I mean, that's one of the biggest problems. The awakening is attempting to find the truth. We know we don't have all the answers, but man, we at least have a lot more answers than people that are worried about how many inches their TV is, about what series just got upgraded, you know, whether or not Game of Thrones is going to spin off to a bunch of other things. My philosophy on that is enjoy the sports game, enjoy all those elective things. But when you go to sleep at night, please make sure your report card for the day has at least a few things that could help society. Maybe it's not every single day, but at least by the end of the year, you've got at least 50% of your time is spent reinvesting in the world that we live in the brain that's in your head, in the conversation you have with other people. You know, I'll tell you the secret and then I'll shut up. This is what blows my mind. I'll talk to people all the time. And it's like this show. And I will turn people's brains on. I just see it happen all the time. Girls love this too, by the way, guys. But women, it's going to work the other way too. Trust me, women, you talk about stuff on this kind of show to a dude. If a guy can be wet, he'll be wet, right? But you have intelligent, interesting conversations with people. Don't try to create a bunch of negativity and discourse. Be careful about how much, you know, pedophilia and stuff you throw out there. That's subjects for your hardcore friends, right? But just interesting things like this subject matter and all kinds of other things that you're thinking of that I don't have any knowledge of. You will have one of the greatest conversations of your life. You'll feel like you were alive for the moment you had that conversation. And the other person will be so interested in you. You know, I just told you about my buddy from Hawaii. He's fascinating. He's amazing. Every single thing that guy touched, he's like Midas's son, you know. And as soon as old King Midas dies, he's going to be the replacement. That's what he is. But he digs me because he knows I do the same exact thing. We both have a good time. No matter if we're rich or poor, it doesn't matter. We're always doing something interesting. You can be that person if you're not already that person. If you are that person, keep going, baby. Keep going. But if you're not that person, guess how much it costs to become that person? Zero. You make the decision to be that person. There you go. Can't say you can't afford it. Can't say you're too young or too old. Doesn't matter. I mean, God, of all the people I've met in my lifetime, one, it's always fascinating to talk to a young kid who's just like totally awake. Amazing. I know a few kids that I've mentored for over a decade. They're prodigy children. When they're my age, they're going to put me to shame. But talking to an old wise man or an old wise woman, some oracle making cookies in the kitchen, isn't that the best experience ever? Well, I think you should pine to be that person if you're not already that person. But we all know we can be better than we currently are. So that's the fun part about this game. We have to live with imperfections, but we also need to have skin in the game. So I just want to put this in your brain. Please conversate with other people about this kind of stuff. Please. And then if you have any successes, epiphanies, whatever, write them in the comments below. If you're coming in from audio only, you can come into the YouTube channel, drop a comment, get out, whatever. Yes, we all hate the deep state mechanisms. What are you going to do? We have a locked Facebook group too. But that brings me to the next point. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's not the prettiest site in the world. I should say that. But it has been rebuilt with a template that helps you find all the episodes easily. There's a search field now. There are categories for all the episodes. So if you know, I don't like all this other stuff, but I like these alien conversations and other stuff, you can click on the category and boom, you're set up. I'm looking at the statistics on a daily basis. We're literally breaking all the records set in previous years, previous days. So it's working. It's good. Up there, all the links for video, audio, ways to donate to the page or donate to the movement. And we have, again, our locked Facebook group full of some really awesome people. We did get a funny question today. Someone joined, and his first comment was, are you guys a bunch of flat earthers? Is this another flat earth society? The answer is, we're not anything. We're everything. So don't worry about it. Sit down, pull up a smoke, whatever you got to do, your favorite PB&J, and have some fun. It's all about really laughing at absolutely all the chaos that's going on. I would say that probably out of all the posts on a daily basis, 60% are just hilarious. I want to give a shout out to Dave, our moderator on that page. He has been a blessing to the entire movement. He has his beliefs. I have mine. Other people have theirs, but he is gracious and beautiful on that page. So super shout out to Dave. Thank you so much for being a big part of the page, I guess now for probably about 2 years. So it wouldn't be the same without him. When I am off busy, he keeps the thing just bumping. So if you see him commenting out there, give him a shout out because he's definitely pouring his heart and soul into this thing. And he keeps everything distributed too. So he's not too one way or the other. But like I said, the brother finds some of the funniest stuff. We have some really great memes coming in from all of the listeners. So maybe I'll do an episode to say thanks to everyone at some point. There's also the link to the new season one remastered. If you just want to binge that, there's a whole separate channel. The link's on the top of the website. But if you see any of the season one on the website, you're guaranteed to be on the right feed. People are still ingesting the old videos, and I respect that, but just know they're a lot better on the season one. I'm on both, so when you comment on either one of them, I'm right there trying to reply. I am currently in July. This is about the last week of July. Way behind. So I'll get to all you guys eventually. Appreciate all your comments. Appreciate all your stuff. But until next time, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. We'll be right back.